media.
And that's what it is, right? This Islamic model, this Islamic revolution, the Islamic Republic is presenting a model, is presenting the, not, I don't want to say alternative, because I think that they are the alternative. This is the default. This is the true path, right? The same path that, for example, Jesus was showing to the people, or Moses was showing to the people, or Abraham was showing to the people. This is the same path, the path that Allah, God, the Almighty, the Exalted, has set out for mankind, right? This is the default. And if it were to be implemented, all of these values in their correct sense would be implemented upon the earth. But the alternative came and, you know, threw everything off course. The pharaohs of the time, the Nimruds of the time, the right, the oppressors of the time, the tyrants of the time, they came up with their own systems, you know, whether it's, I don't know, Western liberal democracy, or it's communism, or it's Marxism, or it's free market capitalism, and it has taken humanity off the straight path, the Sirat al-Mustaqim of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's all we have time for today. You can find us at www.pasttoday.com/EN. That's the Call of Islam page. From myself, from Sayyid Mathi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please, don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
European News Bulletin.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Saeed Pourreza. Straight to our top story. China has banned BBC World News from airing in the country. In a statement published at midnight Friday, China's National Radio and Television Administration criticized BBC reports for not being impartial and fair. China has defended its position, saying if the BBC chooses to be a rumor monger against China, it would have to bear the consequences. The news comes a week after UK media regulator Ofcom stripped Chinese state broadcaster CGTN of its British broadcast license. Ofcom accused the channel of breaching impartiality standards, an allegation China denies. For more on that, I'm joined by political analyst Carlos Martinez. Thank you for coming on. First off, your reaction to this recent flare-up of tensions between China and the UK.
Thanks, Saeed. So obviously the immediate context to this is that CGTN's broadcast license was revoked by Ofcom last week, purportedly on the basis that CGTN is a state broadcaster and answerable to the Chinese government. Well, regardless of what view anyone takes about that rule, we can all see that it's being applied in a selective and discriminatory way. Lots of state broadcasters have Ofcom licenses, including the BBC, national broadcasters from Japan, France, South Korea, and so on. And I think Press TV can probably sympathize with this predicament, having itself been subjected to the same type of discrimination. So really, in revoking the BBC's license, the Chinese authorities are responding in kind. And I think the public sentiment in China...
Right, and what do you think of the Chinese comment? They have accused the BBC of being, and I quote, a rumor monger against Beijing.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly accurate assessment. You know, BBC's coverage of China has been very biased, particularly in relation to Hong Kong and particularly in relation to Xinjiang. For example, the BBC recently featured a very long expose article about human rights abuses being perpetrated against Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang. But this expose was based almost exclusively on documents put together by some sources that have got basically no credibility whatsoever. First, there's Adrian Zenz, who's this sort of independent, far-right, anti-China crusader and a senior fellow at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, whose research methods are dubious, to say the least. And the other big source is the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, which is a government think tank funded by the US State Department, funded by various arms manufacturers. So China's well within its rights to complain about the BBC's lack of objectivity and credibility.
Other than the BBC's coverage of Hong Kong, if we were to go back and to look at what has led to this flare-up in tensions between the two sides, anything else that you can think of? Because they said they were going to hit the reset button in terms of their relations, especially in the post-Brexit world. What did go wrong?
Yeah, pressing the reset button would be a correct and necessary thing to do. And in terms of the interests of the British people and in terms of humanity as a whole, in terms of the wider context of the new Cold War, would be a very sensible thing. Unfortunately, tensions between the UK and China have only ramped up over the last year or two. Obviously, in the last few weeks, we've had the dispatch of British Navy warships to the South China Sea in a clear statement of support for NATO and the US's China encirclement strategy, which is in itself an irresponsible and hostile act and a threat to peace. And I wonder what the British public's response would be if Chinese warships were to enter British waters. I suspect not very favorable. Meanwhile, a few months ago, you had Britain essentially taking orders from Mike Pompeo to remove Huawei from Britain's 5G infrastructure on spurious security grounds. And then, of course, we've got the interference in China's internal affairs by offering residency to Hong Kong's BNO passport holders, which is essentially making a statement in support of an anti-China separatist movement in Hong Kong, which itself, up till 1997, was a British colony run on more or less apartheid and highly anti-democratic lines. So, you know, we've got a state of tensions which is escalating,
right.
And it would be very wise for the British authorities to, as you put it, hit that reset button.
All right. Carlos Martinez, political analyst. Thanks for your input. Moving on now, at least 20 Israelis, including individuals from the weapons industry, are under investigation over illegal weapon sales to an unspecified Asian country. Israeli officials say the suspects developed, manufactured, tested, and sold suicide drones, also known as kamikaze drones, to the unnamed country. The news comes less than 2 weeks after the announcement of 3 sales of these kinds of weapons by the Israeli arms industry to unnamed Asian countries. Russia's UN delegation has clashed with Western ambassadors at a virtual meeting of the world body in New York.
Over the last 6 years, we've had 2 very important questions which Kiev still hasn't answered. How exactly do they intend to resolve the conflict? And how do they envisage the future special status of the Donbas region within Ukraine?
The United States reaffirms its unwavering commitment to Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. We will never recognize Russia's attempted annexation of Crimea.
Kiev's began its use of force shelling residential areas by its army, which continues to this day. How can the people of Donbas have any connection with Ukraine?
The people of Crimea voted to rejoin Russia in a referendum in 2014. Kiev ignored the decision and sent in troops, leading to clashes with Russian-backed separatists. So far, more than 14,000 people have been killed in the conflict. Russia says it's prepared to break off relations with the European Union if the bloc imposes any more sanctions on Moscow. The UK and EU have introduced targeted sanctions on Russia over Alexei Navalny, the country's leading far-right opposition figure. The EU is now considering additional measures over his recent jail sentence, a move lauded by Navalny's allies.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has made it very clear Russia will not tolerate the UK and EU interfering in its internal affairs. A week after Moscow expelled diplomats from Sweden, Poland and Germany, accusing them of attending a rally in support of opposition figure Alexei Navalny, Lavrov warned against any further provocations.
We do not want to isolate ourselves from the world, but we must be ready for this. If you want peace, prepare for war.
Navalny recently returned to Russia from Berlin, where he was recovering from a nerve gas poisoning. Accused of violating the terms of his parole in an embezzlement case dating back to 2014, he was arrested upon arrival and handed a 2.5-year jail sentence. And now he is in court again, facing charges of slandering a war veteran who appeared in a clip broadcast on Russia Today. It promoted constitutional reforms, which would extend President Vladimir Putin's rule. In a tweet, Navalny branded the war veteran and the others in the clip traitors, but he himself is now facing the same accusation. His allies are urging the EU to impose fresh sanctions on Moscow, which the Kremlin says is nothing less than betrayal.
The only plausible explanation for Navalny actually turning on the Russian establishment is that he's basically a paid operative. I mean, we've seen this time and time again. Juan Guaido in Venezuela is one example. We've seen even the Green movement in Iran arguably is possibly another example of it. But of course, the Western governments have a habit of creating false flags, psychological operations, color revolutions. This is part of the permanent goodie bag and package that comes with Western foreign policy. So Russia is no different.
The bloc's foreign ministers will debate possible sanctions against the Kremlin on February 22nd. France and Germany are pushing for travel bans and asset freezes on Putin's allies, possibly as soon as this month. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Moving away from Russia now, millions continue to celebrate the measures implemented by U.S. President Joe Biden. But there is one promise Joe Biden has yet to fulfill, directly tied to criticisms of past policies he pioneered. Will Joe Biden keep his word to Black America? Richard Sedan raises that question in this edition of Cut to the Chase.
With the world still reveling at the removal of Donald Trump from the White House, people have been celebrating the election of President Joe Biden. Since the election race began, the Democrats and the liberal media attempted to present Biden as a decent-minded, all-American libertarian sent down from on high to cure Americans' wounded divides. But is this really the case? Well, in the interest of fairness, it's only right to look at his early actions since taking office and his record as a senator. Let's take a look. In his first few hours in office, Joe Biden immediately signed a number of executive orders taking action on a range of issues. They included reversing Trump's Muslim travel ban, halting plans for the controversial Keystone oil pipeline, allowing transgender people to join the US military, stopping the Mexican border wall construction, rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement, taking action over the coronavirus pandemic, which under Donald Trump spiraled out of control. These measures and the selection of former Attorney General Kamala Harris as Biden's vice president led liberals around the world to hail Biden as a progressive, woke president of the people. However, despite this, there are critical issues and promises glaringly absent from Joe Biden's magic bucket list of early executive orders. And what's missing from the list has been completely drowned out in the wave of uncritical support for Biden. Because many people want to forget that during his decades-long career, Joe Biden consistently pushed policies and rhetoric that devastated Black American communities. Joe Biden's 94 crime bill, something which the liberal media have remained quiet on, is widely viewed as paving the way for mass incarceration in the United States, mass incarceration which overwhelmingly impacts Black people. Not only that, but the language used by Biden in pushing the bill through was remarkably similar to the racially charged super predator myth pushed by the Clintons, who wanted to play up to racial stereotypes about black people.
We have finally gotten more police officers on the street. That was one of the goals that the president had when he pushed the crime bill that was passed in 1994.
Yes, that crime bill signed by Hillary's husband, Bill, with none other than Joe Biden standing behind him, clapping for a bill which would send thousands of black people unjustly to prison. Now, back to the all-American racist language that made the crime bill possible.
They are not just gangs of kids anymore. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators.
Super predators? Did she mean? No, she meant. And everyone knows this is the cunning racist language of the post-Reagan era. Now, back to President Biden. Surely Biden didn't play this game too, did he?
It doesn't matter whether or not they're the victims of society. The end result is they're about to knock my mother on the head with a lead pipe, shoot my sister, beat up my wife, take on my sons. So I don't want to ask, what made them do this? They must be taken off the street. That's number one. There's a consensus on that. Unless we do something about that cadre of young people, tens of thousands of them, born out of wedlock, without parents, without supervision, without any structure, without any conscience developing, because they literally, I yield myself three more minutes, because they literally have not been socialized.
Born out of wedlock, without parents, without supervision, and without conscience. Who exactly is Biden stereotyping here, and which audience is he playing to? Still, maybe we're wrong. Biden can't be racist. After all, he did select Kamala Harris as his vice president. And a long time has passed since 1994. It's not like he's made any racist statements since then, surely.
Unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
Wait, so all black Americans think in the same way? Well, all right, maybe that was a slip of the tongue by President Biden. Surely, especially in the election campaign, Biden wouldn't make any more sweeping generalizations about black people, right?
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
Well, all right, so maybe he did. But at least despite these comments, Biden has now begun to make amends to reform the system he created, right? Wrong. According to activists, reducing the footprint of federal prisons will not reduce mass incarceration in any significant way. It will simply push prisoners to public prisons. It will do nothing to end the systematic injustice which sees black people imprisoned in disproportionately higher numbers for crimes which others are not, in what is now known as a modern form of slavery. Joe Biden made a promise when he was elected.
Especially those moments, and especially those moments where this campaign was at its lowest ebb, the African-American community stood up again for me.
But given his track record, do we really expect Biden to change? So many other communities have seen their concerns prioritized by Biden, and as of yet, he has taken no serious action on policing or mass incarceration. Has Biden really changed? Or is he the same Biden who pushed through the 94 crime bill?
Portugal's parliament has voted to extend the country's state of emergency to the beginning of March, allowing the government to keep the current national lockdown in place for the rest of this month.
It's all very clear. We must leave spring without another summer and autumn under threat in terms of lives, health, economy and society. We must ensure that Easter in early April won't be a cause for more months similar to the past weeks.
When the COVID-19 pandemic reached Europe, Portugal was praised for its swift reaction, while other countries were overwhelmed. Now it's the world's worst per capita rate of coronavirus cases and deaths. With its health service overwhelmed, the desperate nation has asked Germany for medical help. By Sunday last week, only 7 intensive care beds had been left in the entire country.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we cover the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
In this segment, the comments by Kehinde Andrews, a black studies professor, who says the UK was built on racism and compared Winston Churchill to Hitler. Let's see how those comments have gone down in this country with Richard Sudan. Richard, take it away.
Absolutely, Saeed, and good to see you. So there's been a massive debate which has erupted online concerning Winston Churchill, which is dubbed, or who is dubbed rather, as Britain's greatest ever Briton. But I think here the reality for many is if you're born in Britain and you're educated in Britain like I was, you would have had a very one-sided view of history and Churchill when you went to school. But I think the more kind of serious intellectual, internationalist, scholarly view put forward by Mr. Kehinde Andrews really understands that Britain's legacy has a much different reputation around the world than it does in Britain, because of course Britain colonized and committed genocide in Africa, Asia, all around the world, and actually much of that colonization and genocide was predicated on the idea that white Europeans are of a superior race. And Churchill himself actually talked about this idea himself. It's on the historical record that he believed white people were a superior race. You know, this is a matter of historical fact, and facts simply don't care about people's feelings. You know, why would we not listen to the historical views from Professor Kehinde Andrews compared to, say, the likes of the Daily Mail, which platforms people, or did platform people like Katie Hopkins, etc., etc.? I think the truth about Britain is what it is, and if you want to glorify Churchill, Britain and the Empire and Britannia ruling the waves, you have to really acknowledge the whole picture.
All right, and what I find fascinating is when he appears on British television, he constantly gets interrupted and they won't even let him finish his sentence. Probably, you know, lends a lot of support to the veracity of the arguments that he's bringing. Maybe tell us what Twitter users have been saying about the professor and what he's been saying.
So let's go to Decolonize the Curriculum, that says, Galton's eugenics, we know Churchill firmly believed in the ideology, and of course he did. Nessa tweets to say, Britain as a nation oppressed, and press the messed up island for centuries isn't racist. Churchill had almost the same views as Hitler. What about him is worthy of praise. Churchill was responsible for genocide too. And we have an interesting reaction here, and a telling one, from Nigel Farage. Farage tweeted, a woke school has banned Winston Churchill because he promoted racism and inequality. Apparently he also unfairly imprisoned and tortured many. This rewriting of history in our education system is dangerous. I highlighted this because many would say, Saeed, Farage is a proto-fascist or certainly a racist. Many would say he led a very racist campaign. So perhaps it's not surprising that Nigel Farage would endorse the factual racism of Winston Churchill.
All right, Richard, and while we're still talking about racism, tell us what the British Home Secretary has been saying about the Black Lives Matter protests against racial injustice in 2020.
Oh, shock, horror, hold on to your seat. Priti Patel labeled Black Lives Matter as, quote, dreadful. But to me, Saeed, this didn't really surprise me, because we learned from the Windrush scandal that Priti Patel already evidently doesn't believe that Black Lives Matter, because that scandal directly impacted communities, almost exclusively black, dealing with major injustices, wrongful, unlawful deportations, in some instances leading to death. And Priti Patel has done nothing to implement the findings of the Windrush Review by Wendy Williams, despite the fact she promised she would. But also, one more quick point, Saeed. I think Priti Patel may have aspirations to be Prime Minister. Boris Johnson is on the record as calling black people pickaninnies with watermelon smiles. So maybe Priti Patel wants to appeal to Boris Johnson's voter base in order to have political aspirations. That's what some people are saying, Saeed.
Wow. Well, let's hear some other people's view on this as well.
I want to go to Joe Plumstead first, who says, Priti Patel hits out at the dreadful Black Lives Matter protest. one awful human being. I'm so sick of this level of ignorance. Tom tweets, Patel playing the populist, nationalist, xenophobic card again. Racist lacquer wrapped in the Union flag. Covert support for the ultra-nationalist, xenophobes or worse. And finally, if we have time, Diane Abbott MP tweeted, so the Home Secretary continues in her mission to bring communities together. A very tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic tweet there from Diane Abbott.
And she is definitely not woke, Richard, is she?
I think many would say, Saeed, she's the polar opposite and perhaps antithesis of woke. And I mean, to come out with a statement like this, to back up many of her policies, to be fair to Patel, many of these scandals erupted before her tenure, but many would also say she's certainly perpetuated racist policies and arguably made it worse since her time as Home Secretary.
All right, Richard Sedan with those stories. Richard, thank you so much. And thank you, everyone. Goodbye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Impeachment lawyers for Donald Trump accused the prosecution of waging a politically motivated witch hunt against the former president, vehemently denying the charge that his words and actions incited the deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol as they concluded their sharply partisan defense and prepared for a swift conclusion to the trial. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Sam Levine and Lauren Gambino. The piece is titled Impeachment Trial. Defense lawyers argue Trump is victim of cancel culture. Stay with us for more of Sam Levine and Lauren Gambino's article. Impeachment lawyers for Donald Trump accused the prosecution of waging a politically motivated witch hunt against the former president, vehemently denying the charge that his words and actions incited a deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol as they concluded their sharply partisan defense and prepared for a swift conclusion to the trial. Confident that Trump's unprecedented second impeachment trial would again result in acquittal, the defense lawyers channeled the former president's bombastic style and his loose relationship with the facts to denounce the case against him as an unconstitutional act of political vengeance fueled by Democrats' long-standing hatred of their client. They claimed the House managers had grievously mischaracterized Donald Trump's remarks to his followers at a rally on Wednesday, 6th of January, when he exhorted them to fight like hell during a rally just before they marched down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington and attacked the U.S. Capitol. No thinking person could seriously believe that the president's January 6th speech on the Ellipse was in any way an incitement to violence or insurrection, said Michael Van der Veen, one of Donald Trump's lawyers. At the core of their argument was that Donald Trump's words and actions were protected under the First Amendment. Trump's language, the defense argued, was no different than the heated rhetoric politicians frequently use in American politics today. To make this point, they showed misleadingly edited clips of Democrats, including some senators seated as jurors in the trial, encouraging their supporters to fight in an attempt to portray them as hypocritical. The prosecution has strenuously refuted this contention, arguing that Donald J. Trump's conduct directly incited an insurrection against the nation he had sworn an oath to protect, and therefore did not amount to protected political speech. The defense also sought to portray Donald Trump as the most pro-police, anti-mob rule president this country has ever seen, claiming, despite evidence to the contrary, that he had never condoned violence and noting that he also told the crowd to march peacefully and patriotically during his 6th of January speech. This unprecedented effort is not about Democrats opposing political violence. It's about Democrats trying to disqualify their political opposition. It is constitutional cancel culture, said Michael Van De Veen, a personal injury lawyer. Trump's lawyers used less than 3 of the total 16 hours allotted to open and close their defense of the president. Following their speedy presentation, the Senate proceeded to a period of questioning the prosecution and defense, the conclusion of which cleared the way for closing arguments and a verdict, perhaps as early as next Saturday. The defense's presentation on Friday, 12th of February 2021, came after the 9 House managers, acting as prosecutors, spent 2 days building a methodological case against the former president that retold the insurrection with harrowing new video. In their presentation, they argued the riot was not the result of one incendiary speech, but the culmination of Donald Trump's desperate bid to cling on to power. Crucially, the managers contended Trump betrayed his oath of office by failing to intervene once the siege of Capitol Building of Congress, where both the House and the Senate were in session, began, and that his lack of remorse in the aftermath shows he remains a clear threat to American democracy. The President of the United States did not defend the capital of this country. Stacey Plaskett, a delegate from the Virgin Islands and one of the House managers, told senators on Friday, 12th of February, "It's indefensible." During their presentation on Friday, 12th of February, Donald Trump's attorneys attempted to redirect the responsibility from the former president solely to the people who laid siege to the Capitol building. In a preemptive rebuttal, the managers played video of the insurrectionists shouting at police that they had been invited there by Donald Trump and pointed to several court documents in which rioters charged with criminal offenses have said they were acting at Donald Trump's behest. The defense also sought to recast some of the most damning moments of Trump's presidency, portraying as benign his remarks that there had been very fine people on both sides of a 2017 neo-Nazi rally in Charlottesville, resisted by counter-protesters. They also defended a December 2020 phone call in which Donald Trump implored the Georgia Secretary of State to find enough votes to overturn Joe Biden's victory in that state. The phone call is referenced in the article of impeachment against Donald Trump as part of his brazen campaign to reverse his election defeat. 17 Republican senators would have to join with all the Democrats to find Trump guilty, an unlikely verdict. A conviction would allow the Senate to then vote to disqualify Donald Trump from ever holding future office. His team maintained that the trial was unconstitutional because Donald Trump was no longer in office, even though a majority of senators, including 6 Republicans, rejected that argument after hearing hours of debate on the issue on Tuesday. Bruce Castor, a Pennsylvania former prosecutor serving as one of Donald Trump's attorneys, concluded his case with a grave warning about the consequences of convicting the former president. This trial is about far more than President Trump. It's about silencing and banning the speech the majority doesn't agree with. It's about canceling 75 million Trump voters and criminalizing political viewpoints, Bruce Caster said before resting the defense case on Friday. It's the only existential issue before us. After the defense rested, the senators silently submitted their questions for the prosecution and the defense, leading to a number of heated exchanges and disputed timeline of events. During one contentious back and forth, Donald Trump's lawyer said his remarks at the 6th of January rally were totally appropriate, prompting an impassioned response from Jamie Raskin, the lead House Democratic prosecutor. Violence all over the rallies, the president cheering it on, delighting in it, reveling in it, exulting in it. Come on, Raskin said, how gullible do you think we are? Pressed by multiple senators to elaborate on when Donald Trump first learned of the breach of the Capitol building, Michael Van Der Veen said Trump was not aware that Mike Pence's life was in danger when he disparaged his vice president in a tweet just moments after he had been rushed from the Senate chamber. That timeline was thrown into question earlier this week when Senator Tommy Tuberville revealed that he had informed Donald Trump of Mike Pence's evacuation during a phone call as the mob closed in on the Senate. Asked by a senator if the phone call indicated Donald Trump was tolerant of the intimidation of Mike Pence, Michael Van Der Veen said it did not and dismissed the conversation as hearsay. But speaking to reporters after the trial adjourned on Friday, Senator Tommy Tuberville, a staunch supporter of Donald Trump, stood by his version of events, though he did not recall precisely what time Donald Trump called. Trump's state of mind as his supporters stormed the Capitol is important to a number of senators weighing whether to convict him or not. On Friday, CNN reported that Donald Trump told House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy during an expletive-laced phone call on 6th of January that the rioters were more upset about the election than the California Republican was. Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, one of only 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump, confirmed the account in a statement on Friday night, likely the eve of the vote. To the patriots who were standing next to the former president as these conversations were happening, or even to the former vice president, she said, if you have something to add here, now would be the time to do it.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids? That is, from the very beginning of the birth.
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you all, and you're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, only on IRIB English Radio. And in this program, we discuss problems and questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children, and the answers are mostly based upon the book Children in Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. So I'm Hasnain, and we have our guest in our studio, Brother Miqdad. Salaamu Alaikum, brother.
Wa Alaikum Salaam Wa Rahmatullah.
Brother Miqdad, one of our listeners has a question that my child is slightly chubby, and because of that, he gets made fun of at football practice. So should I keep him or should I take him away from football? So this is the problem that usually, you know, chubby children get to face because of the bullies. So what do you suggest in this case that parents should do?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So a couple of points. First and foremost, it's important to find out if making fun of is done intentionally, or is done with mean evilness in it.
Yeah.
Sometimes children, it depends on the age of the child, obviously, but after a certain age, children, when they make fun, they intentionally make fun to embarrass, to humiliate.
It's like body shaming.
Exactly, body shaming. And it's done in a bullying way, basically. Yeah. If that's the case, then I encourage the parents to speak to the coach, speak to the team that's responsible for managing this football practices, and to make sure this shouldn't happen, basically.
Yeah.
Sometimes, however, make fun of is actually just, it's just teasing, a very naive,
innocent, like in a friendly manner.
In a friendly manner, basically. Yeah. And sometimes what happens is that parents feel bad, but actually the child never felt bad about it because he knew that my child, my friends were just joking around, and it wasn't anything serious.
So it depends upon how the child is taking it.
Exactly. And it depends on what kind of, not just how the child is taking it, but also what kind of made fun of was it? It was a really intentional, evil made fun of. Or was it actually a friendly way of just teasing, basically, which is not very damaging.
Yeah.
And sometimes parents feel really bad, but the child didn't feel bad at all.
Yeah.
So those are for parents to just ignore, basically. The child will just overcome it and will just, it doesn't have any impact whatsoever, basically. So it needs to be clarified from the onset that what we're talking about. Secondly, is that I would speak to the coach as well, again, this time to clarify what is it that the child is made fun of, basically.
Yeah.
Sometimes a child...
Like fat shaming, it might be.
Yes, but why? Is it because a child just doesn't look slim or doesn't look like all the other players? In which case, it's irrelevant to football. It will happen anywhere, basically.
Yeah, anyway.
Right?
Like, it might also happen in school.
Exactly. But sometimes it's because of football specifically. The child who is a bit chubby can't play football properly.
Yeah.
Right? Just is not able to run as fast as others. Yeah. Is not able to kick the ball as others. If that's the case, then I would find out if it's really possible to... If the coach will be able to determine, basically, if it's really worth carrying on or not. Sometimes you realize that, and it's up to parents to be realistic again, that sometimes you realize that children are just not able to do certain things, right? And it's actually not healthy to push a child into something that you know he's not able to do, right? Some children that are, because of their physical condition, are not able to play football. That's fine. It's not the end of the world. It's not counted as a failure. I'll be good at other sports.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll just take a short break over here, and your audience, stay tuned. We'll be right back after a short break.
Hey, stop! I got a paper game!
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to your audience. We're talking about children getting bullied by their mates. So, Brother Miqdad, please carry on.
So talk to the coach and find out if really the child is not able to play football, mm-hmm. and if the coach has tried, basically, obviously, mm-hmm. if it's a good coach, then he's tried to encourage, he's tried to teach, he's tried to bring about team spirit as well. Yeah. If all that has happened, and there's no sense of progress mm-hmm. in the child.
You know, what happens sometimes is, you know, parents see in this way, that child is chubby and they send them for football, which even the child wants to go, you know, it can help him in losing some weight, it can help him, you know, getting active through sports, different sports. But yes. over there, he finds some bullies.
Now, if it's really there's no progress in football, for example, uh-huh. right? There are other sports and there are other ways to lose mm. weight, or there's other ways a child can enjoy himself as well, uh-huh. right? Sports is also, a lot of it is related to fun and enjoyment. Mm. So if the parents realizes that my child can't do well in football, mm. and maybe if I encourage him to do other sports,
yeah.
He'll become much greater, much mm. better, and actually achieve the same level of fun and happiness as mm. well as exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Then let's do that, basically. Let's mm. avoid football. It's not mm. necessary that we all have to do football.
Yeah.
Now, at times, what happens is that there is social pressure.
Right? Yeah, so like making, you know, getting, you know, made fun of can also put the child in mental stress.
Yes. But the point I was going to make is that sometimes there's social pressure in the sense that, let me put it, a peer pressure, right?
Yeah.
All my friends play football.
Mm-hmm.
It won't look nice if I don't play football.
Yeah.
And this is what encouraged me to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why a child will say, no, I really, and be adamant to play football, because mm-hmm. he's under peer pressure.
Yeah.
Now, in this case,
he just doesn't want to be out of the frame.
Exactly. He doesn't want to be out of the social norms of everybody playing football. If that's the case, then obviously, again, it's something difficult to say. It depends on different circumstances. The parents mm-hmm. have to make the right decision over here and judge according to what is best in the interest of the child. However, one important aspect is to strengthen the confidence of the child.
Mm-hmm.
If a child feels confident in the sense that he doesn't succumb to peer pressure,
yeah,
right? A child who believes and has enough self-respect mm-hmm. in the sense that if other people all go to football, it's okay if I don't go. I still count myself important. Mm-hmm. I have my own self-respect. I have my own self-confidence. And I'm very...
Hey, he should take a decision with his own personal choice, not just because of the peer pressure.
And he's confident to tell it to his friend that you guys go play football. I'm happy not to come play football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do something else. I'm going swimming, for example. I'm going martial arts, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And this obviously comes through a good, strong Islamic child upbringing, mm-hmm. where we're able to give children enough confidence, enough self-respect
mm-hmm.
To be able to go against peer pressure. And this is actually, if you're able to do this, then hats off. This is an immense success.
That's amazing,
because in today's world, being a Muslim is a peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
To be with the norm and with the society today, you have to act in a way that is against Islamic principles a lot of the times. And so we need to train our children that you need to have enough self-confidence and self-respect
mm-hmm.
to go against the norm and stand out to do the right thing, that which is best for you.
That's right. So let's take a short break over here. So dear audience, stay tuned.
Ya Muqiy al-Khayrat, Ya Muqiy al-Khayrat, Ya Muqiy al-Khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're talking about how to train our children, you know, to go against the social norms. So, Brother McDowell, please continue.
So, if we're able to talk to a child, explain to him that perhaps we need to mm-hmm. be realistic, we can do other sports, or even sometimes without mentioning it to the child.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, depending on the child's age, depending on his understanding, depending on the different circumstances, encourage him to do other sports
mm-hmm.
With his friends or with new friends.
Mm-hmm.
Encourage, scope and widen the scope of exercise mm-hmm. and activities that we have.
Yeah.
Right, there's a lot of things that we can do out there,
mm-hmm.
Not just a standard football and volleyball. And you can do mountain climbing, you can do wall climbing, you can do canoeing, you can mm-hmm. do martial arts. You can do so many different things out there, mm-hmm. right? Some of them are more physical than others. Some of them require other skills that are not present mm-hmm. in other sports. But it's important that we explore, right? Mm-hmm. And at times, children have a body restriction that doesn't allow them to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're able to give them enough confidence and self-respect to understand that this is how my body is and mm-hmm. has some limitations, but I have other skills and other abilities I can do.
So let me ask a question again, like reframing it. Like, you know, if a child is interested in some sort of sport, so but over there he's made fun of just because being chubby. So what he can do over there, like be it any sports, you know, just people fat shame him or like body shaming. What can parents do over here?
If you mean that a child wants to, is adamant that he wants to play football, take our situation, he's adamant he wants to play football, even though he's being bullied. He doesn't mind being bullied. Yeah. He's happy to bear it and still carry on playing. I would suggest that we need to understand if really he's doing this because of peer pressure or not. Sometimes a child is happy to be bullied, but still wants to go on because of peer pressure. Because if he feels that if he leaves, he'll be counted as a failure. He'll be counted as a loser. That we made fun of you and therefore you left, basically.
No, he's playing football because he wants to play. Okay. But so over there he's getting bullied.
Okay. So if it's the first situation where he's actually doing it because of peer pressure, then it goes back to parents dealing with the situation in a very mature way. Encouraging the child to see that, no, don't worry about this. Your ability is greater than what you're seeing over here. Yeah. And to convince the child in a way to take another sport or be able to adapt to the situation in a better way. Because it, in a continuous fashion, in the long term, to be continuously bullied and made fun of is, is very, it can be dangerous for a child's mental health. However, if a child wants to carry on playing football despite the fact that they're bullied because they enjoy playing football, okay, then it comes back to speaking to the coach and telling the coach that my child loves playing football, okay? But this is happening on the pitch. It's being bullied. It's being made fun of. Is it possible for you to do something as a coach? And if it's a good coach...
What about parents teaching the child, you know, how to handle the bullies?
Yes, you can. But at the end of the day, usually bully happens when you're all alone and you're surrounded by other children. There's not much you can do. Externally, I mean. Obviously, internally, you can teach a child that you have to be strong inside you. But you don't want to teach a child to response back or to...
There might be some like physical fight or something.
Yeah,
like
you don't want to get involved in all that, that kind of stuff. You can teach a child to ignore, a child to be strong within, basically. But this needs to be tackled at an authority level, basically, where you need to speak to the coach, you need to speak to the parents if necessary, to make sure these things do not happen. And usually it's tackled by creating a good team spirit, by creating a good bonding between the children.
Yeah, like can it also be done by not reacting to the bullies?
Yeah, yes, ignoring bullying as well is a way to stop the bullying as well.
So thank you so much, Brother Mukhtar. That was a great discussion. And thank you so much, dear listeners, for joining us on the program. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Until another program, fi amanullah.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned, perfect with no flaws at all, are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.